Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 27th of January, recording at 9:19 p.m. and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, first, a quick look at the highlights for the week, as this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. Stock markets, well, it's been another good week. A little bit of profit-taking in here today, but not that much. The Asian markets, where they have been open, remember we had the Lunar New Year, Chinese New Year holiday, which kept China closed all week. But when Hong Kong reopened on Wednesday, as did the HSCI index, they have been moving higher, and we have seen generally steady action. We've seen some good gains in Europe, albeit a little bit of profit taking here today. And in the Americas, we have also seen the rally continue, although Wall Street a little bit mixed. The S&P closed down a couple of points today, but it's been a pretty stellar performer. And the NASDAQ Composite Index and the NASDAQ 100 indices are both higher here today, and they've been standouts. Long-dated government bond prices have steadied a bit in the lower side of their narrow ranges. The U.S. dollar has been quite soft. The U.S. dollar index is currently 78.80. The euro has continued to experience a good short covering rally. It's up to 132.28. And sterling's up to 157.34. In the risk on, I hate that term, but you know everybody uses it, that quote risk on unquote environment, with stock markets rising, the dollar has predictably weakened once again, and most notably against the Asian currencies, which have reasserted their strength. Okay, what else? Crude oil is a little bit steadier than I would like. 111 and change for the Brent, and the WTI is at 99.61. In after-hours trading as I speak. Industrial metals, another risk-on trade, have had a pretty good week overall, extending the rallies that we've seen throughout January. The grain and bean complex had a solid week, as did most commodities. A little bit of a pause here towards the end of the week. Coffee a little lower, sugar a little lower. That's pretty much it. Okay, so what's going on here in terms of the big picture? Well, as far as Asia's concerned, the gradual easing of the monetary tightening is evident and looks set to continue. And the performance, the stock market performance of these Asian indices has improved. I'm expecting China to, the mainland China indices, to open higher next week. And a little bit of a catch-up move overall. And that certainly is what the technical pattern suggests. And I think we probably saw an important low last month. And certainly, given all the bearish comment that we've had regarding China, all the hard landing talk, and fears that would mean far less commodity imports and so on, China's growth has been so strong in recent years that it's hard to actually put in perspective the move that's actually compared when people just look at annual figures and they say, oh, the growth is slipping. Well, it didn't slip that much. It's down to 8.9%, but people have been saying, well, China's growth may slip to 8% this year, or the more pessimistic people are always saying maybe down to 7%. Well, I think it'll be higher than 7%, but the key point that I'm trying to make is that China's economy has grown by 40% over the last 5 years. So 7 or 8% at that larger size is stronger, making a bigger contribution for the rest of the global economy than what we were seeing 5 years ago. So I think China will remain very much a global engine, as will the Asian region generally, and Brazil is strengthening as well. The whole resources sector is picking up once again. You weigh it all up, and this looks to me like a secular, I beg your pardon, like a cyclical bull trend. And we've been saying that really since we got the support building activity following the August climactic sell-off and the subsequent retesting of those lows in September and also in October, and then the good October rally, which really started the recovery, the stock market recovery that we are currently enjoying. Now, let's take Europe as well, because while the outlook is certainly improving in Asia and most of what people call emerging economies, I call them the growth economies. What about Europe? And clearly, Mario Draghi, with the moves that he has made, has helped confidence towards the region considerably. And one of the big ones, the biggest one, was these virtually unlimited loans for the banking sector, which enable them to borrow money from the ECB at 1%, and then they've been able to plow that back into government bonds, including some of the quite attractive yields that have existed. And the evidence that they have been buying those bonds is in the form of the declining yields that we've seen. For instance, you might remember in December and November, I beg your pardon, December and most of January, throughout January, I've often mentioned that I would rather, it goes back to November, these comments, but I would rather own a 10-year Italian bonds, which were yielding around 7% or a little bit higher. I would rather own those than US 10-year treasuries below 2%. Now, today, those 10-year treasuries in for Italy, the yields dropped down below 6%. So they've come down steadily in the last fortnight. And the Spanish bond yields have fallen below 5%. And again, the reason, as I've mentioned, is that the banks in Europe are able to borrow unlimited funds from the ECB, plow that money into government debt. The ECB obviously hopes that they're lending some of it to worthy, creditworthy borrowers, and that's beginning to happen. And what the banks can then do is to put up the bonds that they bought as collateral and borrow more from the ECB. Now, I've described this as a Ponzi scheme, and I think it is, except the main difference between this Ponzi scheme and something that Madoff and others have run is that those fall apart or become exposed when the new money coming in no longer equals or offsets the money that's actually flowing out. But if the ECB is providing all the liquidity in its own version of QE, quantitative easing, then this can go on indefinitely. Now, what they're hoping in Europe, of course, is that over time, that confidence will improve, stability will return, and Europe will begin to generate some genuine GDP growth once again. And I think that's a reasonable prospect, but well, at least for most of the economies overall. The two main trouble spots in Europe are not Spain and Italy, which I mentioned a moment ago, but as you know, are Greece and Portugal. Their bond yields are much higher. Bond investors are certainly going to face more haircuts with that debt. And I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere down the road that there are referendums in one or both of those countries, and people vote to actually leave the Eurozone. But nobody's talking about that right now, but and that's unlikely to even be a consideration until the next general elections actually occur. Meanwhile, talk of a complete breakup of the entire Eurozone currency is obviously very wide of the mark. And people have been saying that, well, this is all going to happen. And we had a consensus, a strong consensus, saying that it would happen towards year end. And that's never a view that Fuller Money has held. And I think that people are backing away, have been backing away from that view steadily throughout the month of January. So yes, Europe will remain a generally slow growth area for a very long time. Yes, the debt problems will remain for a very long time. And yes, the ECB is trashing its balance sheet by buying some not so good debt that's been offered them by the European banking sector, but it is holding the whole region together. And their bet on some GDP growth, as I said a moment ago, occurring in the next few years is probably a reasonable one overall. So again, we do not have a collapse of the Eurozone. We do not have a collapse of the euro currency, as you can see from its current short covering rally against the US dollar. And then there's the USA. The figures have continued to remain a little bit better. The economic figures have continued to remain a little bit better than so many people were forecasting. And yes, that's with the help of quantitative easing. And yes, the government debt is continuing to balloon. But all that liquidity is going to go somewhere, and a fair amount of it has been going into the stock market, or enough has been going into the stock market at any rate, to actually cause the U.S. stock market indices to be good, strong relative performers. Now, in the short term, following a steady rally from mid-December, carrying through most of January now, we're overbought. Some of these trends look, and you can see that in the stochastic indices in the chart library, and the short-term trends look a little bit overextended. So that suggests that it's not going to be very long, that within the next few weeks we're very likely to see some sort of pullback and reaction and consolidation. But remember those rising lows that I've talked about really throughout the fourth quarter of last year, ever since the big rally that we saw in October. And we have that succession of higher reaction lows for most of the world's indices. An increasing number, a majority now, have pushed back above their 200-day moving averages. And a number, a good many of those 200-day moving averages, which are trend smoothing devices, of course, they have leveled out and are beginning to tip upwards once again. I've talked a lot in the last few months about support building taking place. The patterns really look like, from August onwards, look like base formations. They're not entirely different from what we saw in 2010, following a loss of form by stock markets before they found support, picked up and pushed higher. Although the patterns are better, they're bigger. They look more promising this time around. All this, everything I see technically, indicates to me that our view that this was not only the end of the cyclical bear market, but the end of the cyclical bear market meant that it was the beginning of a new cyclical bull market, is very much on track. Now, as we're overbought in the very short term, watch some key indicators. Watch the bank indices. They usually lead on the way down. They sometimes lead on the way up. In particular, watch the banks, the S&P 500 banks index. I posted that, or I'll be posting that shortly in Friday's commentary. And watch also the Eurozone bank indices. Keep a good eye on banks generally, because they are a good litmus paper test when things are starting to go wrong. But they've had reasonable performances of late. And watch also for eventual downward dynamics in some of the more important stock market indices in Wall Street and Europe and Asia, which would suggest that the next reaction and consolidation has commenced. But we've seen such a good move up from those mid-December reaction lows that I think it's quite likely, quite probable, that we will see another higher reaction low during the next stock market setback. Now, because of this risk-on, risk-off business, and the high degree of correlation that we see among so many assets, so all stock markets pretty much move up together, as do a majority of commodities. When stock markets are rallying, the U.S. dollar weakens. When stock markets are falling, the U.S. dollar picks up. This degree of correlation is greater, you will have noticed. I'm sure veteran subscribers will have noticed. It's been greater in the last few years than we had ever seen before. And the reason for that, quite simply, is the high-frequency algorithmic trading. I don't like it. I maintain that it's predatory. It exaggerates volatility. That volatility is particularly pronounced during periods of stock market corrections or cyclical bear trends, such as we saw last year. But you can also get melt-ups. They're not quite as fast as the panicky sell-offs. But we've been in a bit of a melt-up here, I would argue, over the last, 6 weeks and counting. So what that means is that as the stock market rallies tire and roll over into another, what I would refer to as probably a healthy correction, that you'll suddenly see everything going down together, and that will might well include gold, which has been performing much more as a risk asset than a safe haven since its August peak. And that unnerves people, but we're all getting to live with it, or learning to live with it. And I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon, because if anything, the high-frequency algorithmic trading is gaining or taking over a higher proportion of overall volume. It's not decreasing, in other words. Now, in terms of trading, it makes it more challenging. In terms of investments, it's not so much of a problem, I feel, as I've said before. Long-dated government bond prices, there's enough quantitative easing and still enough uncertainty around to keep yields low for a while longer. Eventually, they will push up because these are historically low yields, and I don't expect the quantitative easing to go on in perpetuity. The only way these yields could stay down really low is if the United States really was in a Japan-type situation. There are higher odds that Europe could experience a Japan-type situation for quite a lengthy period. Those odds are higher than the U.S. than that the U.S. will experience that, and because U.S. growth is picking up more quickly than we see in Europe. But in terms of the outlook for these long-dated government bonds, again, I don't feel that the yields are attractive for U.S. Treasuries or U.K. gilts, for instance. I much prefer equities. But whereas I have previously thought that we might see a rapid move up in those yields, as long as we're getting quantitative easing, that just isn't going to happen. And in Europe, as long as we're getting a recapitalization of the banking sector through the yield curve, it's just not going to happen. In other words, we're not going to see a spike upwards in those long-dated government bond yields of any consequence. So the overall outlook, I think, is one for yields remaining really quite low for an extended period. Quantitative easing continues. A lot of liquidity is sloshing around in the system. A lot of cash is on the sidelines. That's a bull scenario for stock markets and also for commodity markets. With the commodities, we have to watch out for spikes. And with any luck, it'll be some months before that becomes a problem. And the longer that takes, the better overall. The risk is always with crude oil. We don't want to see another major and major disruption in oil production. And again, with a little luck, the next spike in the price of crude oil can be postponed for a number of months. But as I've said before, this is the second consecutive decade of a tight supply-demand balance for crude oil. So if you get people piling in to establishing hedge long positions because they fear global unrest, whether it's caused by Iran or the risk of a civil war in Nigeria, or destabilizing consequences of Arab Spring type movements, then you see oil prices higher than are really justified by the consumption figures. Now that's a risk that's out there that we're well aware of. But right now, the world can live and recover with the current oil prices where they are. Spikes are always the danger in here. As far as the agricultural commodities are concerned, some good weather would help enormously to mitigate food price inflation pressures. But again, I maintain, Fuller Money maintains, that this is a secular bull market in commodities overall, and that eventually we will see upward, more upward pressure, particularly for a number of the industrial commodities. I wouldn't be surprised if the industrial metals had quite a significant recovery over the next few months, but they will probably avoid bubble territory overall. But excuse me, the support building that we've seen, the technical action suggests that those industrial metal prices will move higher. The performance of the mining shares certainly confirms that they're leading the way up. Now, what about gold overall? I think the odds are pretty good that the low that we saw got down to a little bit above the $1,500 level last month, that was quite an important low. The soft dollar has enabled the price of gold and other precious metals to continue to push higher. Both gold and silver, well, you could say the entire sector really, is looking a little bit overstretched in the short term. So when stock markets boil over and go into a consolidation and reaction phase, I don't think we'll see a full-blown correction in stock markets. Just another reaction and consolidation. When that happens, I think you'll see the same thing happen with gold and silver. And that pullback will create another buying opportunity for those who are interested in picking up a little more. In the short term, as I said, they're looking a little bit overextended, but the more important news is that the secular bull market is intact and that the odds are good that we have seen the floor in terms of the low point in terms of the correction that began last year. So when we do get a loss of momentum and a reaction, I'm reasonably hopeful that that will form another higher reaction low, and that we'll see a higher prices thereafter. It may take we may have to wait until close to the end of 2012 before we see gold challenging, let alone exceeding its highs to date. But the key point is that that overall secular trend looks intact, and while gold is certainly no longer cheap, low interest rates and lots of liquidity sloshing around the system are certainly good medium to longer term tailwinds for the price of gold. As for currencies, I think the dollar's main merit is as a safe haven when fear is rising. We'll continue to see it play that role or perform in that role over the years ahead. It's the growth economies that will see the secular bull trends in currencies. When Owen and I were looking at the Asian dollar index today on a long-term chart, look at it on a 20-year chart or more, and we agreed that it's quite reasonable that that will eventually work its way back up to the levels that we last saw before the Asian crisis. I don't think that's going to happen soon, but I do feel that it will happen in the next 5 years or within the next 5 years or so. So, not a bad outlook here right now. This is an opportunity for investors in particular to make some money, to see their portfolios appreciate, particularly if you're in Fuller Money Themes. They've had a good couple of months. And on that note, all the best to all of you.